All right, everybody, welcome back. Bio Bros, episode 3. Remember, we're still in that weird zone because we are on all major streaming platforms now. We have 14 YouTube exclusives. Go watch those if you haven't. But we are on episode 3 on everything now. And we're on even more. We are on TikTok now, and we have a public Discord. Before, when we were recording this in Discord, we didn't have anything just for us. Now, you guys can join in and see some pictures, we can chat with us, do all that kind of stuff. So that will be fun. But as you can tell from the title, today we are doing the first installation of this new series I'm excited to do is the most understood pet this week is going to be the African clawed frog, dwarf clawed frog. And they are one of the most misunderstood pets. And this series, we're going to Google the animal and then care. And we're going to click on the first result. And we're going to go through that care sheet and we are going to review it. And then we'll also talk about some common things we see with like accidental abuse and neglect or why we think that they are the most misunderstood, all that kind of stuff. So Alex, tell them a little bit about the other interesting happenings recently.
Yeah. So yeah, built an entire Discord for us now, so if anyone wants to join there, when you join it'll ask you to introduce yourself and things like that. There's a art channel, enclosure builds channels, plant channel, pet channel, so you can like post your pictures and stuff. Join, talk to us, talk to other people, learn more about the animals and things like that. I'm planning on adding more stuff so it can be like, if y'all want to suggest an episode or something y'all want to see, I'll add channels like that too. Also, when you join, you choose if you want to be notified when we post on YouTube or TikTok, which we do obviously now have the TikTok as well. And the TikTok is username is the Bio Bros, but instead of it just being one word, it's the period bio period bros. And we only have one video up there right now. It's a feeding video of my Mexican red knee tarantula. So if y'all want to see some cool clips and stuff from us of animal feedings or just setups and things like that, go and check that out. We're going to try and post on there pretty regularly. That's mostly what we've done recently. Everything will be down in the description, like for the Discord and stuff, so y'all can join if you'd like to.
Yeah, so we'll get into the episode a bit now. So, like I said, I googled African dwarf frog care and clicked on the very first non-sponsored result. And not gonna slam whoever did this because it's probably gonna be a little mean, but sure, you guys can find it if you really look hard. It starts us off with some interesting facts and important things to know. It says their experience level is intermediate. I don't know. I feel like that is actually pretty accurate. I feel like it is kind of intermediate because there's a little bit of clutch to keeping this species. It's not, you need a little bit of feel, and that does come with experience. So I think I agree with that.
Yeah, I would too.
They grow to about 3 inches. I say it's a little too big. I've never really seen. Maybe you should include their legs. Body, 1.5 inches. Probably. That's a little overestimation, but I would rather an overestimation rather than underestimation, so that way people get proper size tanks. Lifespan, they live for 10 to 15 years. That's not true in my experience. You're buying adults, and a lot of times when you're buying adults, they are not, like, they're not young. You know? You never really know how old they are. And I've just never had one live that long. I think my record is like 3 years, and I've kept these species a lot and fairly extensively. Even gotten eggs. I haven't raised the tadpoles or anything, but I have kept them for a while. I have not seen that 10 to 15 years. And then, quick little fact is they're completely aquatic. They have lungs there at the water surface. Of course, they're frogs, but that is really cool. They are fully aquatic, and they truly are fully aquatic. You see their bone structure, it does not work for being on land. So that is true. And then I actually like this part right here. Almost is a little word of warning, and it says they can be kept as tropical community fish. But here's where I disagree. It says they may eat them if they're hungry, meaning the frogs will eat the fish. I think that's a little backwards. I think the fish pose more of a threat to the frogs than the frogs pose to the fish. Unless you're keeping really, really, really tiny fish that are also really slow and bottom dwelling, which I can't even think of a species off the top of my head that really would be dangerous.
Mm-mm.
Unless Alex can think of one.
The only thing that I can think of small and bottom dwelling would be like the dwarf corridors, and that wouldn't be dangerous because there's no way you could fit it in its mouth.
Oh, and even then, it would kill the frog because
because of the armor. Quarry.
Yeah, they're armored catfish. They have spines. Like it's So
I would be impressed if I ever saw a frog actually catch a fish and be able to fit it in its mouth.
Yeah, and we'll go into the cohabbing in a second, like a little deeper into this episode, but. So I kind of screwed that. All right, now, part two. How do I set up the tank? And I'm paraphrasing everything this is saying. I'm not reading this article right out. It's much more well-written than this. It says 1 to 2 African frogs in a 5-gallon, but any more than that, or if you want to keep fish, go for a 20-gallon. Here's my thing on this. I say gallons don't matter, floor space does. These frogs are native to Central Africa, specifically, why am I missing it right now? Specifically around Nigeria and Cameroon, with the exact ones that we have coming from the Congo in a couple locations. That's a whole other can of worms we're going to get into at the end of this episode because it's a bit of craziness we discovered in the pre-show. But that's kind of the area they're from, and that area of the world does have floodplains, but they very rarely exceed 24 inches in depth. So that's a 20-gallon tank, and that is at the deepest. So I would way rather have 20 gallons of water in a 75-gallon floor space, which I have kept that same setup before with these frogs, and it works out amazingly. So I say floor space over gallons every day. A 20 long is significantly better than a 20 high if you're keeping. But stocking, though, I do agree with. The 5-gallon floor space tank, and in that tank, you could totally have it filled all the way up. Yeah, I wouldn't do more than 2 frogs. And if you want more, which I have a 20-gallon floor space tank that I built for these frogs, and I've had up to 4 in there, thought that was a little too many, but 3... no problem at all. So I agree with that. I think a little more context could be nice, but I do agree with it.
Yeah, I also agree. I think that is the way to go with a lot of things, especially when it comes to like animals that aren't like fish. Don't go by the gallon size, just go by the floor space or the actual usable space that they'll have.
Yeah, that's definitely a good note, because in general, usable space is far more important than unusable space. General rule. Okay, next section. Heat and light. It says lighted aquarium hood is the best, because you can get lights in it, and a lid. Cool. I like lids for these frogs if you're going to have a tank all the way full, because they are frogs. They do need to get up to that surface to breathe, and they go real quick, and they're kind of dumb, really. They'll totally jump right out. That is true. So, yeah, get a light. Well, get a lid on your tank. It's going to be all the way full. And then give your frogs 8 to 12 hours a day of light. They'll stimulate their natural environment. We had a whole episode on lighting. You know we agree with lighting and having circadian rhythms and all that. Even though these frogs are nearly blind, give them day and night still. Definitely agree on that.
Yeah, and they also they tend to be a more like dusk, dawn, and nocturnal species. So if your light's on don't worry if you're not fully seeing them out as much. They probably will still come out, but they're probably more likely to hide during the day, because even though, like Shaw said, they are nearly blind, they still can sense that light. And they know when they come out and eat.
Yeah, and after this, I'm totally going to give you guys tips and tricks to make your frogs more active and better and all that. Like I said at the very beginning, I've kept these guys fairly extensively. I've learned a lot about them through experience. And second part is heat in this one. They say between 68 and 78 degrees. Now, this one I definitely disagree with. They're from equatorial Africa. It means near the equator, which means it's never going to be 68 degrees. Yes, maybe you get the point. It's not getting cool there. Around the equator is like 75 to 85 degrees pretty much all the time. So I say keep the water temperature mid to high 70s, very low 80s. That's kind of where I say. We found some other care sheets too, just looking around, that do advertise that. But for this point, we're talking about the most misunderstood pets or critiquing these. So this is the top article, and it says keep them 68. I disagree. And next section here is cleaning and maintenance. Now this one, they've got a bone to pick with this section. Alex already pre-read this one too, and he does as well.
100%.
It says choose an under gravel filter or a power filter, but I'm going to focus on this under gravel bit here. Who has used an under gravel filter in the past 20 years? And then even then, that was a little blip in time and people thought they were cool. Really, nobody's been using under gravel filters since like the 70s. They're just not great filters. They're kind of weird. I don't know why they decided under gravel was cool. I don't even think the place that made this article can provide you with an under gravel filter.
I don't think there's many places anymore that can provide you with an under gravel filter. I've not seen one for sale in a store in probably 15 plus years.
Yeah, and even then, I'm sure it was in an old dusty box in the corner.
Probably.
I have no idea who wrote that. Here's the real best filters. Sponge filters. By far the best. As far as filtering the water goes, they're awesome. They cover all the different types of filtration you need in one go. They're not too powerful for water flow purposes for these guys, because remember, their natural habitat has like no flow, like barely anything at all. There's a reason there's not a ton of fish. Like we were talking about, we'd be shocked if they ate a fish. It's because there's not a lot of oxygen and water movement, so they breathe air.
I will say,
sponge filter, definitely my favorite. And second favorite would be just a light, anything light under. I say under filter. These guys get too big of a tank with only a couple frogs and a small filter. That's going to be your way to go. Do most of your cleaning through water changes and plants.
Yeah, I would say another filter that is a good one that I'd seen in articles and stuff is if you get a very, like you said, undersized, not very undersized, but like get an undersized and a weak flow, like a canister filter, because those are, sometimes you can control the flow and things like that on those, so I feel like that could be a good one too. Because then also you have same thing as like the sponge filter, you have all the components you need inside of that canister filter, as well as it's more, that'd be more for like people who don't want to see a big sponge filter in their tanks, because that's not for everybody. They're one of the best filters to use, yet I 100% agree. Not everyone wants to see them. That's the downside of them, is you have to see them inside the tank.
Yeah. Actually, I lied a little bit. My true favorite filter, what I've used on two setups for them, it requires a lot of work, and it also requires a paludarium. This is 100% necessary for this to function. If you're keeping an aquarium, don't even try it, because it's not going to work, and it'll technically convert your tank into a paludarium or a riparium. But is a pump inside of a pump box, like a reverse overflow kind of setup, into a waterfall that trickles down into the water. That is my absolute favorite. I have one set up currently, and I had another one set up in a tank that got broken down. That was actually my favorite. But that's a big ask. And that's a whole project. That's excessive. But it's my favorite. All right, we'll move on from that type of filter. But the second part in this cleaning and maintenance section says beneficial bacteria supplement can keep the environment clean. That's a load of horse crap. That's okay. Can it potentially? Yeah. If you got it right off the shelf and the bacteria is actually even alive in there, and you don't need to add that to your tank once you have an established bacteria colony, which you should have anyway before adding anything, just properly cycle your aquariums, even though they're fish, they still live in water, keep your filter clean and cycle. So that's just a sell product, in my opinion, being a little mean there.
No, I agree.
That's also why we're not shouting out this brand, because I am being a little mean. I don't want them to have... They're not here to be slammed like that. So everyone, don't use soap or detergent to clean anything in the tank. And I actually agree with putting this one in this specific care sheet because of the audience that this one's going to reach. Yeah, toss that in there, be safe. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you're probably a little higher level. And no, already don't use harsh chemicals around your animals. But for the target audience of this specific article, I do agree. Put that in there. Nice little tip. Better safe than sorry.
Yeah, I would say, like, just for the viewers of this podcast, you can use soap. Not like, obviously not a harsh soap or anything like that, but something like a Dawn or some similar like soap, like dish soap like that, you can use, as long as you make sure to thoroughly rinse whatever you use to wash, or like whatever you use that on, to make sure that all of it's off. Because they are amphibians, so they do have more sensitive skin, but either way, that's, you can use that, just have to make sure you rinse it completely and thoroughly.
Yeah, of course it can be done. It's just hard and annoying. Not worth your time. Mm-hmm. All right, substrate and core section. This one, I'm going to rant about for a while. Just because I have my opinions on how these things should be done. And again, that's through my experience. Not necessarily wrong. Layer the bottom of the tank with 2 to 3 inches of aquarium gravel. Now that, every part of that statement I disagree with. 2 to 3 inches, way too thick for these frogs. They don't bury themselves in it. And they're very sensitive and they live on the ground. So gravel vacuuming your tank is going to be dangerous for these frogs. And you have to gravel vac with 2 to 3 inches of substrate. So I say go with the thinnest layer that will cover your tank. That's what I want. That way I don't really have to gravel vac it. I don't have to really stir up. And if I do, it's light and it's not a huge ordeal. That's my thought on it. On just depth. Okay, now we're getting into a whole another can of worms, is aquarium gravel. Do not use gravel for these frogs, please. They are really dumb. They will get stuck in it. They will cut themselves if it's sharp at all. And they will eat it. They're not very sharp creatures. They're near the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to intelligence here. Well, that level of intelligence. They actually have a lot of vocalizations, but we'll get into that after this care. And I don't like gravel for these. I say nice fine sand. Just a nice sub 1-inch layer of fine sand. That's what you want. That's what I've had the most success with. Never had an issue with it. Big fan of sand.
I would say, just for people who would like to keep live plants and things like that, you will probably have to do a little bit of a deeper, not 2 or 3 inches, that's insane, but like basically you would want to do enough to where your roots can be covered and cover the root ball and everything of your aquarium plants, so maybe an inch, and that'd still be like pushing it. And if you,
I actually had a little trick on this one, because I said I kept a 75-gallon paludarium built for these frogs. And what I did, I wanted plants. I built up, well, I cut pots, like plastic nursery pots. I cut them down so they were a little shorter. And I filled them up with aquarium soil. And then I hid those pots behind the scape in there. So I could plant, I could have a deeper and more nutrient-rich substrate for my plants, but not for my frogs. And I really liked that setup. I was a big fan of it. And in my tank, it happened to work out. And but that was because I planned for it too, though. Like, I knew I wanted that. So I planned the scape intentionally to have that kind of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Now, diet section of this one. If they share aquariums with smaller fish, it's extra important the frogs be fed properly. Very important to that. Big fan of that. That is 100% true. They are nearly blind, so they hunt mostly on smell, which means it takes them a good while to find their food. However, one part of the statement I disagree with, it says, otherwise, those fish may become dinner. I would say, otherwise, your frog may starve to death. But, whatever. And then, that's where the second point actually comes in for this article. It says, but fish can turn the tables. Because the frogs are slow, they're going to potentially outcompete your frogs. Now, this one, this point is up for discussion, actually. I don't know how I necessarily feel. I know what I've done, and I know what can potentially be ideal, which are two different things, you know, practice versus theory. Your frog's main food should be pellets that sink to the bottom of the tank. That is true, I agree. I say get a high-quality pellet that is going to fit the needs of this frog, and it has to sink. They will not eat anything that's not on the very bottom of the tank. That's just through experience. I've observed them, and I've done experiments on stuff like that. If it's not on the bottom, they're not eating it. And so I say get a good pellet. Just make sure it's, you know, you're keeping a frog, you're not keeping a goldfish. The diet will be a little bit different. Make sure it's higher protein. They are carnivorous, right? They eat, like, creatures, eat little worms and bugs and stuff. They're not going to be eating plants, so don't give them a algae wafer you would feed to a pleco.
Yeah, they, I know a good suggested one that I've heard of is, I don't know the exact brand, but, like, frog-specific pellets or pellets that are designed for feeding tadpoles. Those are also really good, along with, obviously, the frozen foods and things like that.
Yeah, and that's actually the next point on this is offer frozen or freeze-dried brine shrimp, bloodworms, and tubifex worms. The only one I disagree with is brine shrimp, and here's why. It's actually not about the nutrient content of the shrimp. It's that the shrimp tend to be broken up. If you've ever had frozen brine shrimp, you see there's very few actual whole brine shrimp in there. There's lots of little legs and body parts and pieces in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be hard for a frog to get. So I say small worm-based foods, which is bloodworms, tubifex worms, blackworms. If you can get live blackworms, they'll go nuts for those. Those are the best for them. They love them. I say small worm-based foods are the best, mostly for cleanup purposes. If they don't eat a couple bloodworms, you can just take some tongs and pluck them out. If they don't eat some brine shrimp, you're never getting out of the tank. And like we said, you kind of want an undersized filter, so you want to minimize waste like that.
Yeah, actually, one thing they don't say in this one, but I saw it into another air sheet, which I think is actually a really good idea, is doing like a little ceramic plate or a little ceramic bowl, maybe, and like have it in the center, and then you can put your worms and stuff right there, because that way easier clean up, as well as with the frogs being nearly blind and also going mostly on smell, if it's fed in the same spot every time, they're going to know to come to there to eat, so it's better for them too.
Yeah, that's 100% true. That's definitely an agreement on that. But like we said, like, we did a lot of pre-research for this. I've done a lot of independent research, I guess we'd call it. Like, I've experimented with them and stuff and seen all that. And that's definitely true. And then this is one thing I disagree with here is feed your frogs as much as they will consume in 3 minutes twice a day. It's another one I disagree with every single thing on. Frogs are very, very slow eaters. If the water flows going in a slightly wrong direction, it's going to take them forever to find their food. It's going to take them more than 3 minutes to even know food's, like, for real in the tank. And they're shy. If you feed them during the day, they're not necessarily going to instantly dart out and go look for food. So I don't agree with that one, the 3 minutes thing. I say be patient and learn your frogs. Start off with one or two pellets and up it to three or four, and then, okay, I saw they didn't eat that fourth one. I'll keep at three for a while here. That's kind of where that intermediate thing that I actually agreed with comes in. You need a little bit of feel. That's really helpful for them. And then the 2 times a day, that's just too much. Just too much. I would say every day to every other day, feed them, really. I've seen some seriously obese frogs, and probably from this specific article.
Yeah, they can definitely get too big, and relatively easily.
And then the very last part of this article is just a bit of, like, tips for, like, daily, weekly, and monthly maintenance that kind of just goes on to feed the frog, daily section, you know, feed the frogs, do a quick once-over, make sure everything is in order, and, like, weekly it says do a little water change, clean the filters, and, like, monthly do some deeper cleaning maintenance, which is, yeah, I mean, I agree, like, do basic aquarium maintenance as it comes up, and it'll be good.
Yeah, essentially just keeping the same water qualities as you would for a regular fish tank.
Yeah, now we'll get into where I believe they're misunderstood, for real. Why did we choose this species to go through and redo this care sheet and all that? This one was my idea. Can't tell. Kind of taking the lead on this episode. I love these. Is every single time you see them, they're about to die. They're kept so poorly. Like you saw here, they're kept on that aquarium gravel. They're fed fish flakes. They're breaking all these rules that we went through and either debunked or agreed with in this care sheet. So they're always doing terrible. So you get them, you bring them home, you keep them. Like, and most people don't follow those full care sheets either. Like they're breaking some of those rules. And what we saw, their rules weren't even good. Is now your frog dies. Or now you never see your frog. And they're just constantly stressed out. It's not good. Nobody ever gets to see these frogs' full potential. So here's how you get their full potential. You listen to everything we said in the past, let's see, 30 minutes. Sand bottom, shallow water, low flow. Species only. Yes, you can keep them with fish. I've done it. It can be done. Loads of people do it successfully. If you want the full potential of these frogs, species only. Best way to do it. Trust me, the tank won't be boring. And then black water. Lots and lots of leaf litter. So before, we'll toss this picture in the Discord in the... we'll toss the whole link in the Discord for everybody to see of some wild frogs here. And in the wild, they live on leaves. Just straight up on leaves. Because they live in those flood areas, right? When it floods, what's all over the forest floor? Leaves. So they're going to live on the leaves. Lots of leaves in there. They hide under them. They'll sit on top of them. Awesome. And then they tint the water to be that black water color where it's key with all the tannic acid and stuff. And then it makes them a little more secure too because they don't feel like they're being blasted with this light. It's a little more comforting for them. Do that. Your frogs will be out all the time. You'll always be able to see them. Even during the day. They're not the best hiders because they just kind of sit under leaf litter and rely on camouflage mostly. So you'll see them all the time. And then the best part comes in when they're not stressed out is at night. If they're in a species only tank at night, they talk. They literally wheel talk. I read somewhere during research for this episode, I lost that source, but they say the females don't vocalize. That's not true. Unless my frogs had two different voices each, I've heard females vocalize. Not in the same way, not mating calls, but they vocalize. If you add, so I've done this one before, I had three frogs in the tank, one passed away, and I wanted that trio back. I wanted the two females and a male ratio back there. Add the new frog, at that very night, the tank's right by my bed, so I could hear it all night, they're chirping at each other. They make this little like buzz sound, and all of them were talking to each other, like first day of school, like getting to know each other, like, oh, who's the new roommate? They're really, really cool and interesting. And then later on, as they get more comfortable in the tank, it does kind of just turn to the males doing mating calls. But they're intelligent socially, which I did not expect to be true. I thought they'd be totally, I'm sure they are fine on their own and don't really care, but they are social creatures. They actually will talk to each other, and it's different vocalizations than mating calls. That's blew my mind when I found that out.
Yeah, this you think of this little tiny aquatic frog and you don't ever think about them making sound, which is crazy.
Yeah, that was something I was very interested in. I think I might have some recordings on my old phone. We'll have to see. But it's really cool. Like, they are social. They have social skills. They talk. And I mean talk because it's not like buzzing like mating calls. Like, the mating calls are longer and you can tell. And these are just little chirps, like, hey, are there other frogs here? Yes, I'm over here. What's your name? Like, that was level of conversation, not like a full-on like breeding call. It's more standard of frogs in general. So that was really weird. Really cool. Big fan.
In the way you're describing it, it reminds me almost of how I have three currently morning geckos. Not a species I'd ever thought I'd hear make any noise, but they do. They do the little chirps just like that. They chirp at each other, and I'll hear them all night chirping at each other, and it's kind of cool. It's like they're very quiet, but you just hear like a little chirp. It's just them talking to each other.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a very similar experience, because like I said, I had them in my room.
Yeah, mine are right next to my bed as well.
Yeah, I love these little frogs. And that's why I think they're really misunderstood. I just think they're not treated right. I think if you treat them right, they're actually insanely interesting and good pets, and I love them. Like, they're one of my favorites, and they have been since I was a little kid, because what kid doesn't go into the fish store and be like, what? Those are frogs? That's sweet. What? I can keep them in my tank? Oh, I'm totally going to get those. But then you keep them totally wrong, and you never see them. So, big fan of that.
Yeah, I mean,
now this is the part of the episode where actually I'll let Alex do some closing notes before we get into some absolute craziness we discovered.
Yeah, so basically to wrap up like the care sheet and stuff, floor size matters more than gallons in a tank. We recommend about from between 12 and 24 at the very max, and that is very max inch deep water. Less water, like less height in the water is better. Do substrate, you want to do like a fine sand. You can do live plants or other decor. Having other things too in the enclosure, such as like rocks or wood that goes close to the surface will also help your frogs, because they will use that to eat more easily, get to the surface, because like we've said, they're not very good swimmers, nor are they very intelligent. Feeding things like frog pellets that sink, tadpole pellets, as well as worms, so red or blood worms, black worms, tube effects worms, those best way to feed them. You gotta keep your tank warm. Do either like a sponge filter or a very low powered and slow moving filter to give them good filtration, using things like leaf litter and other little botanicals in the water to make it black water will help both them be able to hide and act more naturally. You'll see them out more, as well as it also keeps makes the water to the pH that they like, which is about 6.5 to 7.5. They like a little more acidic pH. And yeah, they are a really cool species, especially when you keep them right. They're not a very long-lived species. I think the longest you've ever kept one is like, what, 2 years, maybe 3 years?
Yeah, about that. And I do think some of that is because you buy them as adults. I've never raised them from tadpoles before. I've got eggs, but I never incubate. I never did anything with the eggs. So I have no idea how long one, personally, I haven't raised one from a tadpole and then seen how long it's lived. I've just gotten adults.
Yeah, I also think they're probably a harder species to like breed and raise the eggs, because like, I've never seen any information about actually breeding them. I haven't looked too deeply into it, but like actually breeding them and like collecting eggs and things like that, I've never seen any information on it. But they're a really misunderstood frog, kept wrong a lot of times just because there's a lot of misinformation on them. But again, they're just a really cool, really unique species. And what we're about to get into is going to show how truly unique they are and might actually make some of y'all consider them even more, just because it's so cool, the information that we're about to get into.
Yeah, so I was looking around, I was trying to find this one source that I had found back when I was making a tank for them that showed like kind of an Afro habitat. So I wanted to get into that. I ended up finding this article that is very, very concise in the title here. It is Tetraploidy in the Bodker's Dwarf Clawed Frog, Pipidae, Hymenochirus bodkeri from the Congo indicates non-conspecificity with the captive population. Very concise article name. But it's a scientific article is how they go. They're not, you know, not looking for the whatever prize they give to the book writer people here. We're looking for information. Basically what they're getting at is these frogs are not like the ones that are these frogs in captivity are not like the ones in the wild. So it kind of starts off giving us a little bit of history, and I gave that kind of top of the episode. But in the 50s, these frogs got imported to Europe and America, and the only information was they were shipped from Leopoldville, which is from the Congo, or another one was from Stanley Pool, also in the Congo. Now, they physically look a little different too, like just in the research for this episode, finding some wild images of wild frogs and ones we have here, they do look different. And so they were like, okay, we are going to look into this a little bit. And so they start doing some science on them, and they discover that they don't have the same amount of chromosomes, and they have some distinct features on them. So most eukaryotes, or organisms with cells with a nucleus, are diploid. They have two sets of chromosomes, one from your mom, one from your dad. These frogs are showing to have tetraploidy, which means four, right? So they have up to four sets of chromosomes. And it's very weird. Like, they're thinking they came from hybridizing. We don't really know if they're hybridized with two species within the same genus. And it's really, really weird and interesting information. I don't really know how this is going to progress. The article kind of like lands on, we need to have a full taxonomical revision of the genus to be able to figure out what's going on definitively. And there's lots of cool one-liners that came out of this that I was reading out like before the show. That's like, yeah, we don't know. So currently, we don't actually know what species is in captivity. What you have to call them is Hymenochiris species. There's no real species to call them because they don't fit in any of the current species in the genus. It's very, very weird. So every time they keep doing some like genome sequencing and karyotyping and stuff, and they're just like, what? How come these are not the same? It's very weird. So there's a couple conclusions I kind of come to. Is first one, this is just a different species. They were collected from a location, and it's just a different species that hasn't been rediscovered yet, and it's not a big deal. Option number two, hybrids. They're two species got collected, and they became hybridized in captivity. And third one is kind of, they're a weird hybrid that also happened to have some mutations and stuff, and then got collected out, and we've never really seen them again. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you were reading that before the show, and it was blowing my mind. I was like, what?
Yeah, like, none of the data in this article that I started reading through there matches. Like, none of it.
Yeah.
They do this test on one in the wild, they do this test on one in captivity, and do this one on another one in captivity. None of the data matches. They're like, what is going on here? I really don't know how this is going to shape out. And it's so interesting. Which, of course, makes me like these frogs even more, because they're not... Who really knows? Because there was another species that was... So we thought for a long time these were H. bodgeri, right? And H. curdipes, was another species that was around. But they became extinct in captivity. Could that be due to hybridization? And that's why we don't know what these things are? I don't really know. But the article does land on, we shouldn't call these any specific species. We should just call them by the genus and then the word species. We should say Hymenochiris species. There's not a... We don't really know. Very, very weird stuff. Here's a quote from them. We hypothesize that two different studies here, I'm paraphrasing a bit, may have karyotyped one or eventually more different species and that were present in captivity in a time. And another explanation could be variations in chromosome number and then that kind of stuff going on. It's very weird. Like, I don't get it. Oh, this was the crazy kind of thing. So in all their studies, this study specifically, this article is talking about, they found 36 chromosomes in the individual they tested. Now, almost twice that of a different Hymenochiris from a captive population, and which has an ancestral number of 20. And this one has 36. And then there's morphology and all sorts of things that are like, okay, these are not the same frog as well. Like, morphology meaning they look different. Like, they physically, it's like you look at them and you're like, yeah, those are two different frogs. And then they found, what was it? Let's see, I can't find a part in the article, but they found like 26 in another one. And it's like, where? Oh no, it was 18. But yeah, it's like, where did these things come from? Could they have been misidentified versions of a different species? And then that ended up hybridizing? And now we have this hybrid? Or could it be a different species entirely, unknown to science? Is it like, what is it? We have no idea where these frogs came from. Well, we know where they came from. They came from Stanley Pool or Leopoldville. And anything else, we don't know. But so I think that's probably a good point to wrap this show on. Quick recap, why we think these are one of the most misunderstood animals in captivity is the lack of information on them. And what's crazy is that lack of information goes all the way to the top. The best scientists in the world don't know what's truly going on. And even then, so if they don't know, how is the common folk supposed to know? But what we do know is that they live in, we know where this genus lives in the wild, so we know how to replicate that. They live in shallow water, not a lot of flow, tons of leaf litter, they eat bugs and things like that in captivity, they do awesome on pellets, and they want that wide floor space, tanks, they want not a lot of tank mates, they don't live amongst fish really in the wild, I'm sure they have came across them, but it's not going to be commonplace for them to be seeing fish. So, I say species only. And that's really it. They're very simple to care for, but it's just a lot different than people think. Like, I say the ideal setup is probably a paludarium, just because, you know, it's a really easy way to make a big tank look nice and have that shallow water with low flow. It just kind of works. I say go paludarium, personally. But that's a good point to wrap on, I think, is we actually don't know what these frogs are.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's insane just because, like, of all the animals and all the species in the hobby and things like that, these things have been in the hobby for, over, like, 50-plus years, and yet we still don't know what they are, what they actually are, like, their actual species. It's insane.
Yeah, and the reason I kind of really paraphrase that article a bit is I don't feel confident enough in actually like declaring what's going on in here and interpreting it yet. Maybe we'll give an update later when I fully 100% read through it. I did not anticipate finding out this information in the pre-show. I thought I was just looking for a picture, and then I ended up finding out that we don't know what these are. But yeah, so we'll see you guys next week. Remember, like, follow, share on all platforms now. If it's a social media or podcast site, you can pretty much count on us being on it. So, Instagram's still my favorite place. I like Instagram. But the Discord is now going to be probably the overall best place, too. Go to the Discord. It's pretty cool. I'm not really into this stuff usually. Like, I don't know. Never really been my thing. So I see all these buttons and stuff. It's super cool.
Yeah, I spent a good amount of time setting this up to hopefully be the best for everybody in this community. And I hope everyone enjoys the Discord. I think it's going to be the best place for our community to all join, hang out, talk between each other, post each other's animal pictures and plant pictures and things like that, discuss enclosure builds, all kinds of stuff. And I really hope that everyone enjoys it and that it flows well for everybody. And like I said, we're also going to add things to it later on, like where you can suggest whether or episode you might want to hear and things like that. As well with the Discord, if you join, it can set it up to notify you when we post on YouTube or when we post on TikTok. We will also be putting stuff in there when we post on other sites. We just it can't set it up for an automatic notification. But again, Discord will be linked down in the description. I hope everyone is having a good day, night, morning, whenever you're listening to this. I hope y'all enjoyed the episode and enjoyed learning about these really cool, unique, and underrepresented species and misrepresented species. Excuse me. But yeah, I hope y'all have a good time, and we'll catch y'all next week.